importance. It goes all the way back to...
I'm certain it's very important, Westfall said, putting on a placating smile. But the time is rushing by, and I have so much to do. I'm sure you understand.
She made a show of checking her wristwatch. Of course, Johansson said, looking defeated. He glanced at his wrist, too. You're a very busy woman. Westfall caught the hint of sullen resentment in his tone and ignored it. Johansson clicked the remote controller in his bony hand, and the screens went dead gray. Westfall blinked as the overhead lights glowed to life.
I appreciate your taking the time to show me all this work your people have been doing, Westfall said,
but Johansson slid back the partition that had screened this corner of the fluid dynamics laboratory from the rest of the lab. He was so tall that she had to crane her neck when he was standing beside her. I hope it's been helpful to you, he said, pouting like a little boy who was disappointed with his birthday present. Westfall allowed the scientist to lead her through the laboratory, past workbenches where younger men and women stood bent over their instruments, past apparatuses that were entirely meaningless to her, and out into the wheel's circumferential passageway, where two of her aides were waiting for her.
No need to escort me, she said to Johansson. I know you're very busy, and I can find my way. Thank you very much for such an interesting presentation.
You're entirely welcome, Johansson said weakly. With her two dark-suited young men dutifully trailing after her, Westfall headed briskly for the elevator that would take her back to the first wheel, where Archer's offices were housed. She glanced back over her shoulder and saw Johansson ducking back inside the laboratory.
He's going to call Archer, she thought, and warn him that I'm on the loose.
In the conference room, Archer's pocket phone buzzed softly. Deirdre was glad of the interruption. They want me to go down into the ocean, she was thinking. They want me to ride in Max's vehicle, to live in that high-pressure liquid for days on end. Looking across the table to the weary-eyed, unshaven Jaeger, Deirdre asked, Max, if you can't find the Leviathans, do you still intend to send a human crew down into the ocean? Jaeger shrugged his husky shoulders. That's up to him, he said, tilting his shaggy head toward Archer. I'm just the guy who designed the ship. Archer snapped his phone shut and tucked it back into his tunic pocket. Mrs. Westfall's left the third wheel. She'll probably burst in here in a few minutes. Goody, said Andy mirthlessly. All right, Archer said. We'd better wrap this up. What are our conclusions? The whales have moved away from their usual feeding grounds, Jaeger said. And the sharks have gotten together in a bigger gang than we've ever seen before, Vishnevskaya added. Could those two things be related? Deirdre asked. Gotta be, Corvus said. There's something else, said Archer. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but 2.5 weeks ago, a sizable comet smacked into Jupiter. In the Leviathan's feeding grounds? Corvus asked. Shaking his head, Archer replied, No, it was several thousand kilometers north of that area, and it never reached the ocean. It exploded in the clouds. So? Jaeger asked. It disrupted the flow of organic particles out of the clouds at that latitude, Archer said. We sent a pair of small probes to map the changes in the flow pattern, but they didn't get very much data before they were crushed by the pressure. Deirdre saw where he was heading. You think that the flow of organics was disturbed so much that it forced the Leviathans to leave their normal feeding grounds? It's a possibility, Archer said. Then where the hell are they? Jaeger demanded. Archer merely shook his head. How do we find them again? Corvus wondered. Follow the sharks, said Deirdre. Let the sharks find them for us. Jaeger shot a disapproving frown across the table. The sharks don't like having Faraday around them. They butted her until she left their area, remember? Trail them at a distance, Corvus said. Keep Faraday as far away from the sharks as her sensors will allow. Will that be far enough away so that the sharks won't turn back and attack her? Vishnevskaya asked. Archer puffed out a sigh.
We'll have to try it and see.
Jaeger's chin sank down into his chest. He obviously did not like the idea of risking his vessel against the Jovian sharks. At that moment, the conference room door slid open and Catherine Westfall stepped in, smiling sweetly.
Ah, this is where you are, Dr. Archer, she said. None of your aides seem to know your whereabouts. You really should be more careful about keeping them informed.
Archer shot to his feet.
Mrs. Westfall, finished with your tour of the fluid dynamics lab already?
She stood by the doorway, eyeing the four others seated around the conference table.
Yes, it was very interesting, but much more than I could digest in one sitting.
Archer walked around the table toward her.
Sensory overload. I'm afraid Dr. Johansson sometimes pours it on too heavily.
Indeed, Westfall agreed thinly.
Extending his arm to her, Archer said,
We've just finished up here. Let me take you up to my office and we can discuss what you'd like to see next.
Westfall took his offered arm. As she turned to allow Archer to lead her out of the conference room, she said sweetly to Deirdre,
Oh, Ms. Ambrose, I'm looking forward to seeing you later this afternoon. Why don't you pop over to my suite and have tea with me? Around 4-ish.
Deirdre nodded dumbly, knowing it was not an invitation, but a command.
Immersion Center. Dorn, meanwhile, was sitting on the bottom of the Immersion Center's tank, breathing high-pressure perfluorocarbon liquid while he attempted to pilot a simulated spacecraft. The technicians had set up a simplified control console for him to operate. It was more like playing a child's game than a really demanding simulation, Dorn thought, but he went through the motions without complaint. Rendezvous and docking maneuver, the console speaker called out, its synthesized voice ominously deep in the thick liquid environment. Rendezvous and docking, Dorn acknowledged. A different voice said, Notching up the pressure 10%. 10%, Dorn said. Not that there's anything I can do about it, he thought, unless I want to stop this exercise altogether. The pressure was bearable so far, and Dorn was pleased that his skills as a spacecraft pilot returned to the forefront of his mind so easily.
You're doing fine, Dorn,
that was Dahlia's voice. Even through the distortion caused by the high-pressure liquid, Dorn recognized her easily. All your readouts are well within normal range. Respiration, heart rate, everything. All to the good, he thought. I'm showing them that I can pilot Max's submersible when they're ready to send in a crewed mission. Upping the pressure another 5%, said the technician's distorted voice. 5%, Dorn acknowledged, wondering how far they would go. How far he could take it.
Sitting in a comfortably upholstered chair in Archer's office, Catherine Westfall watched the wall screen display with sheer fascination written clearly on her modeled features. The cyborg was sitting at some sort of console, manipulating keypads with his human hand and his artificial one. He appeared to be in a swimming tank of some sort. The watery light glimmered off the metal side of his face. "He's actually breathing that liquid?" she asked, in a voice filled with wonder.
"He is indeed," said Archer, sitting next to her. "The liquid is loaded with oxygen, and he can breathe it just as normally as we breathe air, almost."
Westfall shuddered inwardly at the thought of it, but she kept her voice even as she asked, "And all the crew members will have to breathe it?" Archer nodded.
It's because of the pressure down at the depths where the submersible will be operating. Immersing the crew in the perfluorocarbon allows them to withstand much greater pressures than if they were in